Golf Podcast, powered by Wynn Daily Sports, where bettors go to bet better. Here are your hosts, Tee Off Sports and Sticks Picks.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Better Golf Podcast. With me, as always, Tee Off Sports, Spencer Aguiar. Spencer, how are we doing? I know it was kind of an up and down RBC Heritage, historically probably the worst DFS weekend of my life, but it's weird because my golf bets were pretty solid. The top 40s weren't bad. We were really high on Streelman. I was very high on Shane Lowry. I would have loved to get him across the winner's finish line, but it just didn't seem like anybody was going to catch Stuart Sink. So shout out to him. I think that's his third title there. What is he, 47, 48 years old? Maybe older than that. I don't know, but he is just playing really good golf. If you didn't know, watching golf, they mentioned that his son is his caddy about 200 times, but it was actually really cool to see them kind of go back and forth and banter a little bit. Seems like they just have a great thing going. And like we were just talking about off air, Sink's ball striking and his distance are like the best it's ever been in his career. So something's going on there. But yeah, shout out to Stuart Sink. How was your week? I know mine was in meh.
Yeah, I wasn't able to get on Stuart Sink. I mean, we were talking a little bit before we went on air, and it was one of those weeks where it was just interesting. I had 9.53 units in play. I profited 0.02. So, I mean, it's about as break even as you can have. But, you know, there's certain parts of my card that were as bad as they've ever been before. Like for my outright selections, 4 of the 6 guys missed the cut for me. I was able to recoup a lot of that with my head to heads. I went 3-2 there for a little less than a unit. And then my bigger recommendation of Kevin Streelman plus 130 in the top 40, that came through. And you know, even though everything else wasn't able to, it's just like, if my card's going to be bad, I'd rather it be bad in the outright market. Those are smaller wagers for me. Those are also plays where there's really there's no difference at all. If we're looking at if a guy comes in last or if he comes in second, I mean, unless you have each way, if you're able to have that somehow, or, you know, if you have a placement bet, but I didn't have any of those guys under those things. So, you know, when Fleetwood missed the cut and Sergio missed the cut and Kisner missed the cut, like, you know, a lot of those were a tenth of a unit, a little bit more on a few of them, but, you know, it's minus 0.83 on outrights. And then I was able to piece my card together the rest of the way to at least make it profitable. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, one of the ways I always look at it is it's going to be a culmination, like a cumulative effort of all 52 weeks here. Like, I'm trying to have a profitable week every time that it's possible to do it. But, you know, there's going to be weeks that are better than others. And I'm still up nearly 40 units so far in 2021. And I guess my biggest takeaway would be just to never get too high or low from one result. It's why I conservatively structure my units to avoid being reliant on a single play. And as I said, the outrights weren't necessarily where I wanted them to be, but the Kevin Streelman play makes up a lot there when I hit that for 1.3 units. And then earning a unit back in the head-to-heads. I mean, that's pretty much all I needed to at least escape a week that otherwise was a little up and down in some aspects of it.
You mentioned Tommy Fleetwood. So I always do like 150 max every week because I just find that really fun to kind of piece through and get your aggregate ownership and figure if you're going way above the field or well below the field on guys. So Fleetwood, for the most part, was like 7% owned in most GPP tournaments. I think I went 50% Fleetwood. So 75 of my 150 lineups, give or take, had Fleetwood. And he missed the cut because the cut line moved one stroke. What was it? Harrington needed to make par, and he ended up making birdie, or he needed to make bogey, I think. And he didn't hit the green in regulation on 18, if I'm correct, and still found a way to get to par. So that was just an ultimate heartbreaker. And he was playing so well to start that second round, too, and then the wheels just fell off. So that's just kind of the way it goes. I'd like to say I would have had a much better week if he just made the cut just because how heavy I was on him and how low the field was on him. But I didn't have any Sink either way. So it was kind of just a miss. I wouldn't play Stuart Sink looking back at it. Looked at my model. He still was like, you know, at average value across the board from a DFS perspective and for betting. So it's just a miss, I guess. And we'll hit the drawing board. But we got a fun one this weekend, the Zurich Classic. So we were talking prior. Thursday and Saturday is going to be a best ball. So this is a team game, two guys. And then Friday and Sunday is alternate shot. So if you want to go into the course here at TPC Louisiana and go about some of the stats that you're kind of looking at and how you actually handicap this tournament, because to me, I'm kind of baffled. My model kind of just broke when I tried to handicap this tournament. So And from a DFS perspective too, you can't play two of the same guys on the same team. So if, you know, if John Rahm's priced at 10,000 and Ryan Palmer's priced at 9,000, you obviously play Palmer because they're going to get the same score. And we can go into that a little bit later, but just a weird, weird week. I'm excited to watch it though.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's one of those weeks where it's going to be different from anything that we've seen. I mean, we kind of got a similar with the match play. That's not something that we ever are accustomed to doing. And when you run a model, you're going to have to try to run it a little bit differently. And this is just an awkward tournament that I'll get through with some of the stats I tried to break down. And it's going to be, it's a difficult process to try to go through with it, but we'll do our best with that. But yeah, it's TPC Louisiana, par 72, 7,425 yards, Bermuda grass. We've seen this as a team event three times. Your past winners would be Rahm and Palmer in 2019. Horschel and Piercy in 2018, Cam Smith and Jonas Blixt in 2017. And as I said, it was a solo event before that. And we have no strokes gained data since becoming a team event. But, you know, I was able to parse out some information for a statistical model when I ran it. And 28% of second shots did come from beyond 200 yards before 2017. And ball striking looked to be a prevalent statistic to target. We have another week of a Pete Dye. Over 7,400 yards means that you're going to need some distance, but a lot of that is also baked into the par threes. Everything's over 200 yards there. So, I mean, you can make an argument that maybe the distance isn't quite as much as it looks like on paper. But yeah, I mean, when I ran this as a model, there were a couple things here, because my first thing is when I ran it, as you said, like it wants to just break your model because you have two golfers and you need to figure out a way to make them one. And one of the things I wanted to do is try to figure out how alternate shot would make an impact. And, you know, these guys are going to be able to go low on Thursday and Saturday. And I think this tournament's going to be won on Friday and Sunday. So I tried to build something that took a combination of both golfers and made them one player. So the first thing I did is I did a 70-30 split between a breakdown of stats and a cumulative team form. So that's just like my current form for each player. I came up with a mathematical weight for it, gave each one a ranking, attached 30% there, and then put 70% on the stats. Now, the problem is you have to figure out what to do with these stats and what's going to be the most pertinent information. So I essentially have a weighted aggregate total for both golfers, and that would be from a statistical perspective, just trying to mathematically quantify alternate shot impact with it. So the first one I did was proximity from 200 plus yards and partner strokes gained putting. I put 35% to that. So 70% of that rank went towards proximity for each golfer, with each getting 30% weight added to their teammates' proximity from their putting stats with it. So I looked at each team from the perspective of one hitting their iron and the other putting, took a rank, and then looked at the opposite combination to get both sides of the equation and gave it equal 50-50 distribution, even though teams will likely have a general plan for who will attack where. So, you know, my thought there is if the irons are going to be coming in from distance, I want guys that can hit a long iron. And I want to look for guys that can also make a putt. Like their teammate's going to have to hit their putt there. So I looked at it there. I looked at both combinations of both players, attached 35% there when I got a ranking. I put 25% to team birdie or better percentage. That's as simplistic as it sounds. Just took birdie or better percentage for each player, came up with an average for each 50-50 weight on it, turn it into a rank, put it into my model, try to figure out where that is. So each team has a rank for that. 20% team approach plus around the green. So it's another approach category. But in my mind, you're going to have to be good with your irons and you're going to have to be good with your short game. I think those are the two things of how you're either going to be able to score or you're not going to score. So 75% of that number for me came from just a general approach. I mixed it with 25% around the green, as I did previously for the proximity from 200 plus yards. I looked at each combination possible, then gave a similar 50-50 distribution. And then the last category I ran was just a team ball striking for 20%. So that was a total driving and GIR percentage for each golfer. Totals averaged out to get a team score. So I ran this in a way, I thought there was two ways to do it. Either you could look at each player individually and then try to compare what you had, or you could look at this where you took all the stats you wanted to run for the week, turn it into a team total and go from there. And I thought that was just the best way to do it. You're going to have to rely on your partner, and you're only as good as your partner is on every single day. So I thought this was the best way to do it. I have all 80 teams weighted for all those categories. And, you know, I was able to spit out a model that weighed all 80 teams the way I wanted them to be. So, you know, it's a unique tournament, but I think you need a unique aspect and perspective to try to break it down. So I think it was, I'm happy with the approach I took. And, you know, I think a lot of it mimics what Vegas is saying. And I think there were some values I was able to find that maybe Vegas didn't catch when they did their numbers, however they did.
So a question I have for you, and I heard this in one of the group chats I'm in with some of the Win Daily golf guys, that they were talking about, it's a, like these pros, they know the difference in the golf ball. So like when I play alternate shot, sometimes I do a tournament, actually this Saturday, it's going to be alternate shot. I don't necessarily, like I personally hit Titleist, but if my friend's playing like a Callaway Chrome Soft or something like that, I don't know if I'd actually know the difference. I'm like, you know, I play a lot, but I'm not like that good to where I can straight up just feel it and be like, yeah, that wasn't my ball. So they were talking about John Rahm hitting, I think he's a Callaway Chrome Soft, and Ryan Palmer is a Titleist guy. So does that matter at all? They won last year. So that's when I was like, when they said that, like, oh, you got to find guys that both hit Titleist or both hit Callaway or both hit Strixon or both hit Bridgestone, like whatever the case may be. It's like the guys last year, Ryan Palmer's always been a Titleist guy, and John Rahm's been Callaway for quite some time. So does that mean anything to you, or is that kind of just noise? So it was just something that I was like, oh, you know, I never thought about that. These guys do know the difference in how their golf ball is going to react on the green, but it's like all the balls are damn near the same with spin rate and all the science on them and everything like that. But I don't know, just a funny question that I heard, and I was like, you know what, that is interesting.
I think maybe more so, like, because I agree with you, it has to mean something with it, but there's going to be a general plan of attack that each team's going to have. And I would think that you would, the player hitting the approach shot would probably care more about that because it might mess with some of their proximity totals, like with the certain feel that they're going to get. Like, I think anybody can hit the ball off the tee and be fine. I would think that the player hitting the second shot might want it at a, you know, a certain something that they're accustomed to more. So like, I think it's one of those things that most of these guys are going to be hitting different balls, as you said. I mean, you're going to have teams that are, but I think it's more noise than anything else. I'm sure teams are going to figure out where they're able to make it work and where they cannot make it work. I mean, you're going to be able to switch it after every single hole, I believe, with it. So, you know, find where, I mean, on the par threes, the guy's going to be able to hit his ball who's teeing off. On the other shots, it's going to come down to, is the person hitting their second shot, do they want to be hitting their ball? And I think those are things that most of these teams can get around. And I don't know if I didn't take any account into it when I ran numbers. And I think it's kind of adding a headache to it. But I mean, it's everything that you're able to add obviously helps if you can figure out some sort of quantifiable measure of how you can make it work. I just think it's adding an extra wrinkle that is kind of difficult to project just because you don't know how somebody's going to react. And these guys are professionals. I'm sure from hitting it off the tee, nobody's going to have that big of a problem finding the fairway with a different ball.
For sure. That's kind of how I thought. And I think when you could putt, you could probably switch it out. So maybe if anything, like the short game, I guess, would be where it matters the most. But either way, let's get right into it. So top fades of the week for you. Anybody that, like, for me personally, I've never bet on this tournament. So I'm probably just going to fade all of the short odd people and just hope a bomb comes through, because it is, you know, it's different type of golf. But like you said, if your model's just putting two guys together, how is there anybody, I guess maybe Cantlay's not in good form, but Cantlay and Shoffley, if you just paired them together, that seems like one of the best golfers in the absolute world. So I don't know, I like, they're interesting to me, but I think any ticket that I punch on the outrights is going to be 50-1 or higher, I think. But any, who are your fades of the week, I guess? So maybe I'm not going back to John Rahm and Ryan Palmer, but both of those guys are in such good form too. So I don't know how I fade that.
Yeah, I mean, my big two fades that I was looking for, and I went a little deeper down the board for it just because I thought we were looking at guys that are getting a lot of either baked in name recognition and value or baked in tournament history value. So my first fade was Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson. This will be the third time they've played it. They missed the cut and came T19 in their other two appearances. You know, I just think Stenson's game is trending in the wrong direction at this point. And I don't think Rose has the scrambling ability he once did to salvage it. So those are two guys that, from like a head-to-head perspective, I was trying to find a matchup for them to take them on. The other team would be Kevin Kisner and Scott Brown. Just a similar thought process there. They're going to be extremely popular because of their close calls here in the past. But Kisner's just not showing the form that I would want to see. The team is 144th in my model for birdie or better percentage. And Brown is outside the top 100 over the last 24 rounds in approach and around the green. So those were two guys or two teams that I was looking to fade. You know, the problem is at the top of the board, it's going to be a volatile tournament. And I think you're going to have to embrace volatility to some extent with it. But Rahm and Palmer graded out at a level that was just so far above everybody else that, like, it's hard for me. And I know they're going to be extremely popular. Like, I mean, some of these projections for DraftKings, I've seen them over 30%. I'm sure in certain contests, you're going to even be higher than that. It's rough, though. I mean, they're a rough team to fade. And I mean, if you're playing, like we always say, if you're playing these, like, mass entry tournaments, sure, you may need to look somewhere else. And it's the type of week to do it. But, you know, if in my single entries and cash games, like, yeah, they're expensive. I kind of like them with the rebate over Xander and Cantlay just because I think Cantlay has such bad form. But I mean, almost when you look at the teams, like the cream kind of rise to the top where, you know, the guys that were the premier players, when you put them with another premier player and you average the stats out, it was hard to overcome some of those guys. And there are some outliers on my sheet. You know, a lot of the guys who did pop up to the top were these guys on the top of the board, I would say.
So when you look at the odds, though, like, all right, John Rahm and Ryan Palmer are probably the favorites, if not, you know, a top three favorite last year. But then before that, Billy Horschel and Scott Piercy in 2018, do you happen to know what their odds were? Just on paper, it looks like, all right, those guys would be relatively long. And then especially Cameron Smith of 2017 and Jonas Blix. Like, so that's what it kind of got me is like, well, maybe I just take a shot on the bomb here and hope things go well, or just find some guys that kind of suit up well together and some relatively long hitters. Cause I do think distance is important here, but not as much like you were talking about, but I don't know. It just seems like maybe last year was an outlier with Rahm and Palmer just destroying the field.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know off the top of my head where they were. I want to say Piercy and Horschel were somewhere maybe around 50-1.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have been a little marker. Yeah. And like, I do agree with you in the sense of like, you're going to have to, like I said, you're going to have to embrace volatility to some extent. And then, yeah, Cam Smith and Blixt, I assume that they were probably closer to the 100-1 range or even higher than that. But, you know, I think what you do get with 80 teams, you look at a lot of these guys at the top of the board, you have many more players and it's just natural with it. It's like you, when you have 156 man field of solo tournament, you know, everybody gets priced in a way. And even when these casinos are building it out for a hold percentage of, let's just say 140%, even these bottom end guys are taking up some of that. And you have a lot of 25-30-1 guys. Like when you only have 80 teams, you have so many teams in this that are going to be less than 20-1, you know, and all those teams are theoretically 5% or more of a perceived or implied win probability that they have. So, I mean, you're going to have so many overvalued options near the top that I do think that you have to make decisions. And, you know, especially from a DraftKings perspective too, like you can't play everybody. So the pricing's hard. You have nine teams over $10,000. You're going to have to make a decision of, I'm going to fade this team, I'm going to play this team. And, you know, I think that decision-making is going to be difficult because you are going to have to play players in the $6,000 range to get it done this week. So, I don't know. I just think, I guess what it comes down to is there's decisions that are going to have to be made.
Yeah, understandably so. I think there are every week, but this week, yeah, I just tried kind of making a lineup off the top of my head here, and it's pretty tough, but I don't have a whole lot of bets at all. I literally punched two tickets, and it's on the same team. So I'm just going to tell you my two tickets, and I'll let you steal the show the rest of the way. My outright is going to be on Thomas Peters. Always been a fan of him. Again, I guess I just love the Euros every week. And then Tom Lewis. Peters is playing some of his best golf that I've seen in a while. Not that great of fields that he's playing in, but he did. I think he finished top 15 in the Qatar Masters. And then, he's been like a walking top 15 finish. And then Tom Lewis. I think Tom Lewis sets up well for the course, especially if irons and everything matter that much. I think this is a pretty good course for him. He did play pretty well at the RBC Heritage. So, what did he finish there? 25th. So, like, he's coming in decent form. And Peters, I think, is one of the more talented golfers out there that we haven't really heard about. And he's still relatively young. So I think we're going to hear a lot about Thomas Peters in the future. Who did I say that about? Oh, I said that about Vic Perez at the Masters. So maybe when next time I tell you that we're going to hear about a young golfer, maybe wait a while because I was dead wrong on Victor Perez. And I shouldn't even trust Victor Perez. The guy doesn't wear a golf club. That freaks me out. I don't know how people like, it's such an advantage to wear a golf glove. I don't know how anybody doesn't do it. Same with baseball guys that don't wear batting gloves. They're just holding wood without tape too. Like, I don't get it, but God bless guys that do. you know, I guess they're more of a man than I am. And then I got the same guys at finishing top 10. I think it was plus 420, which today is 420. So how about that? But yeah, 4-1 for Peters and Tom Lewis to finish top 10. And I believe the best price I found for them to win outright was 60-1.
That's a very good number. What book is that out of curiosity?
That is one that was offshore, and then I believe PointsBet is 50, and I will check FanDuel right now. But any thoughts on those guys?
Yeah,
DraftKings was like 45, I think. So
yeah, I'm going to have to ask you what offshore book that was, because I do like that 60-1 price. And you know, they're one of those teams when you just look at the betting market, you can see that they're catching steam in the industry. That number has been falling pretty much everywhere, and we're looking
for FanDuel's 40-1 now, or 41-1.
I've seen that dropping, and I think that, you know, you're on to something there. And what it comes down to is just both guys are relatively long off the tee. It seems like a relatively good pairing for what it is. They're top 25 in my model in ball striking. They're within the top 30 in that alternate proximity and putting ranges. And then they also they're 15th for me in the approach plus around the green. I hadn't punched a ticket on them yet for an outright, but I am going to grab them at 60-1. I think they're one of those, because the thing is, you're going to have to try to find comfortable pairings here. And I'm going to assume that if these two are playing together, I mean, you have two European golfers. I would assume that, you know, there's some reason why they're playing together. But from a statistical makeup perspective, they kind of do what you would want two guys to do together that are playing on a team. They're both hot recently with the way they're playing. You know, Peters, I guess, I mean, he's been in not the biggest tournaments, but in these weeks during the WGCs, I mean, he has two top 15s there. And then, as you said, Tom Lewis is coming in here hot with a top 25 in his last appearance. So I think it's one of those events where you can get a team like them that can get hot, and that's really all you're looking to find. So yeah, I like with where your mind's at there.
All right, that's all I have. Those are the only ones that I was interested in right off the bat, just looking at some preliminary numbers of the model before it broke. But the rest, I'm taking notes. What do you got?
Yeah, so I have four top 20 plays this week. Three of them come from offshores, which pay ties in full. The other one comes on FanDuel. So the first one is Justin Suh and Doug Gim, top 20. That is plus 130. And I don't know if I can say the offshore account, and I'm not trying to give publicity necessarily to them, but that is at Bovada. We'll just throw that one out there. That's one of the offshore accounts that does pay ties in full. If you are trying to, you know, I'm going to be alluding to that a lot here. So, you know, if they come tied for 20th place, you'll get a full payout rather than the dead heat rules that apply to it. They're one of my favorite teams on this board. I think that the matchup with them, they're two guys, and like it reminds me of like the Hovland Ventura type thing, the Morikawa Wolf thing. Like those two teams are catching a lot more buzz for being the young hot team that it seems like they're going to work well together. Like Sun Gim are that caliber of player, I believe, and they just haven't quite clicked to get to that level, you know, where Morikawa is a major winner and Wolf has had some wins and Hovland's had some success with wins too. So Gim is 10th in this field in strokes gained approach over his last 24 rounds. Suh is my number one putter in my database, and they're 6th in my model for team birdie or better percentage. So I think they can make a run and actually win this tournament. My first play on them is plus 130. My second play would be Jason Kokrak and Pat Perez. That's plus 120 at an offshore book. That's plus 100 on DK, plus 120 on FanDuel. So that's a price that's even better than the competitors, and you're going to get the full payout there. I just think, you know, it's two guys that are capable of getting hot. They're 15th as a team in ball striking, 13th in the long iron proximity plus partners putting. And for whatever Pat Perez is at this point of his career, he can still make putts, and he still seems to be good with his long irons. So, you know, Kokrak's going to add distance. Yes, that team's only going to be able to do as well as Perez can do, but I think Kokrak's an underrated commodity most weeks, and I was happy to find a price on them at plus 120. My third wager was Peter Uihlein and Richie Werenski. That is plus 260 on FanDuel. So that one, they will have to come in the top 20 to get the full payout. That's plus 250 on DK, plus 185 on the offshore account if you do decide to go that route. But They were 14th for me as a team in birdie or better percentage, 17th in proximity plus putting. And I had a proper price for them at plus 180. So that's just a pure number grab where, you know, I don't know. I do have an outright ticket on them. I don't know if they can necessarily win. I just thought it was a good combination. And then one of my favorite values on the board was Teeter and Straka. That's plus 220, plus 280 on the offshore account. That's plus 200 on DraftKings, plus 240 on FanDuel. That's an amazing price where you're getting the best price where it's going to pay out in full. 13th in ball striking, and we've seen that both can get hot with their long irons. I think that's a very streaky team that, like, yes, they could miss the cut, but they could make a run in top 10 this tournament. I have them in a top 20. I have them in an outright. I didn't think it was worth the price to go higher than that into a top 10, but it wouldn't shock me if they made a run. And that was one of my favorite teams that might be a little under the radar that can make a bit of a run at this tournament.
I love it. Those are names you don't hear often. Richie Wawrinski and Eli. I don't know. How do you say his last name? I always butcher last names.
Yeah, Peter Uline.
Uline. All right. So I'm going to punch that ticket as well. Let's get into some. Are there any matchups that you like or anybody that you were straight up picking on that you found anywhere?
Yeah,
I'm having a hard time with what matchups like I actually find a perceived edge in, and I can't really do it.
Yeah, I had four. I'm going to add a fifth one, which I will tweet on Twitter at some point. I haven't narrowed down the last one yet, but the four that I have punched a ticket on, I'm going back to Kokrak and Perez minus 115 over McDowell and Wallace. You know, I think Wallace and McDowell enter the week with good form from what they've done, but this kind of just seems like they're an event where they could struggle. They're going to need birdies. They're not really prolific birdie makers, either one of them. They're 66 as a team in birdie or better percentage. They're both outside the top 100 individually in bogey avoidance. That's something that could be horrific for them when it's alternate shot. You know, one puts the one in the problem, the other one can't get it made, and you just run into more problems when you're not playing your own ball after every single shot. So, you know, you're going to need to make birdies to make the cut in this tournament. And I'm kind of just hoping to find a missed cut out of McDowell and Wallace there. The second one would be Jonathan Vegas and Romero minus 108 over Merritt and Streb. Merritt and Streb are outside the top 50 for me in every stat I combine as a team. Vegas and Romero probably aren't immune to a blow up themselves, which is always risky when you take them in a head-to-head bet. But the one thing I liked is they popped off the board for me when it came to long iron play, ball striking, and birdie or better percentage. Maybe a little bit of that is Vegas just getting hot, but Vegas is a good ball striker. He can probably put Romero in pretty good positions to where he doesn't run into problems. And if they get hot, I just another spot where I'm looking to fade Merritt and Streb. Hopefully they miss a cut. We can get a little bit better than that with the Vegas combination. As I mentioned, I'm going to be fading Kisner and Brown. I found a bet with Sut and Gim minus 105 over them. Pretty much just comes down to what I said there. Sut and Gim probably is the most underrated team in my model. Kisner and Brown would be one of the most overrated teams. And then the same thing to be said about Keegan Bradley and Steele minus 108 over Rose and Stenson. Bradley and Steele were fourth in my model. Rose and Stenson were 41st. Just looking to take that team on where I could. There were a couple matchups. That was the one I preferred the most. And then the one I'm leaning towards right now, I'll throw it out there, I don't have a ticket officially punched, would be Teeter and Straka. I believe that's minus 108 over Stallings and Garnett. We'll see if that's the one I go to. That one's in play. There was a Morikawa-Wolf one. I just think they're a little too volatile, so I probably am just going to back them in the outright market. And then Wawrinski and Uline, there was a matchup with them that I just don't think the edges was big enough in my model. So, you know, stay tuned to that. I'll post the last play onto Twitter there. But the other four I have punched, the fifth one will probably be Straka.
I like Straka. He's playing well, too. I liked him last week. I think he ended up pretty well. Maybe one shot off of, what did I have him at? I had him in the top 40. I think he finished one shot off of top 40. So another heartbreaker for me at the RBC Heritage. In the case that for some reason, Thomas Peters and Tom Lewis, the Tomboys, don't win it for me, who you got in the outrights?
Yeah, I bet on a lot of bets when this first opened. So, you know, I was able to, there's a couple that have moved backwards, which is always good. I have seven outright wagers, which kind of sounds outlandish for a tournament like this, but I'm betting to win a little bit less than I normally am. So I've mentioned this before. I'm usually in the 8 to 12 unit win total. Most of these guys, I bet to win seven. I'll just read off what exactly I have on them just for the sake of transparency here. I put in Morikawa and Wolf today at 16-1. That number should be readily available throughout the market. They've moved backwards. They were 14-1 to open. They should be 16-1, at least on all the offshores they were. I don't know where they are right now on the legal sports books, but 16-1 seems to be a readily available price on the offshore.
Yeah, there's 16 at points bet. You're good there.
So yeah, perfect there. I have 0.47 units on that to win 7.52. That's just a pairing I really like. You know, they might miss the cut, but like, as I mentioned earlier, like we can deal with that when we have an outright wager and that's all we have on them. Like I'm willing to embrace the volatility for what it is with it. And, you know, Wolf is the third longest player in this field in distance. Morikawa is the number one iron player. When you add those two skill sets together, I kind of like the combination. And then really there's one thing that Morikawa does not do well. It's his putting. And Wolf's putting is relatively decent, surprisingly. Like he is 43rd in my model over a two-year sample size, 43rd in my model over the last 24 rounds. Now, that's not good by any means, but like Morikawa's 112th over a two-year sample size. He's 107th over the last 24 rounds. So if he's sticking his irons in, you know, to a range where Wolf can make them, you're going to get a better iron player than what Wolf is able to do. And you're going to be able to get a better putter than what Morikawa can do. And then, you know, as long as Wolf can be somewhat okay off the tee and adds distance and Morikawa adds accuracy, I think that's a combination that they both hit long irons well. So I kind of think they're going to win the tournament. That's my favorite play. And then everything else, I just grabbed value where I could find it where it first opened. Not 100% sure if these numbers are exactly where I got them at, but Sun Gim, I know, unfortunately, that one's fallen. There is an offshore account that has them at 70-1 still. Most of the legal books are down to like 40 or 50. That number's plummeted. I bet that one big. I put 0.15 units to win 10.5. So that was my biggest win total. I have Homa and Gooch at 35-1, 0.2.
I like that team. I'm glad you said that. I do like that team. They're down to 28-1 on points, but let me check FanDuel real quick. But I know that was one that I did like. 31-1 on FanDuel. So that's the
– yeah.
I'm not a Homa guy, but that's a good team. I love Taylor Gooch.
Yeah, if I move them to 31-1,
is there any value still left there?
Yeah,
I'll check DraftKings.
Yeah, they're actually still value at that number. I mean, obviously, shop around. If you can find a 35, go for it. If you can find higher, I'll obviously go for that too. But yeah, I still have value at 31-1. They were the fifth team in my model. You know, both of them are riding good. Pretty. I mean, I guess if you take their last result, Homa missed the cut, and Gooch in the match play didn't necessarily look great, but other than that, I mean, those are two guys with some of the hotter form. And the one thing I really liked with them is that they're eighth and fifth over their last 24 rounds in approach. And they're both inside the top 50 for me in strokes gained putting. And even better than that, over the last 24 rounds, they're inside the top 40, each one of them. So that's a combination that can get hot with their irons, hot with their putter. And that kind of sounds like, you know, if you were to say it on Sunday, well, you know, Gooch and Homa won the tournament. Well, like, yeah, they have the skill set that kind of makes sense that they would do it. So I punch an outright ticket on them at 35-1. I bet Kokrak and Perez at 70. I think that's a real sensitive number. If that drops much lower than that, I do think you have some issues with Perez being able to maybe win this tournament. But I was 0.10 units to win seven. So that's my least win total. I bet Teeter and Strzok at 150-1, 0.07 to win 10.5. And that was a number that was available on one of the legal sports books. I don't know if it still is. I don't know if it was DraftKings or FanDuel. Maybe you can, or maybe it was even PointsBets. Maybe you can tell me which one it was. And maybe it's fallen since then. But that number should be available to an extent, I would think. Still,
what's the price?
150.
See him 125 for Strzok and Teeter.
Yes.
On PointsBets, let's get you the numbers. 120 on FanDuel, DraftKings. Yeah, I think there's maybe just some steam on those guys, or people are hacking into the podcast in live time. 90-1 on DraftKings. Yeah, so that number is gone.
I want to say that that 150 was available on DraftKings. I could be wrong on that because that's a 60-point move seems a little outlandish, but there has been a movement because that one did not come from an offshore account. So, you know,
what would your low value number be there? Would you go down to 125, or you want it right around that 150, of course.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously grab it as high as you can. No, I mean, I still have value on the number at, they're one of my better values in the system that I have. Like, I have them down to 80-1 being proper. So all those numbers theoretically are still value. Grab the best you can find with it. And then the last two, which unfortunately, I think these two moved also, would be Werenski and Uline 125 and Gordon and Thompson. So Will Gordon and Michael Thompson at 90-1. I really like the Gordon-Thompson pairing. That just seemed like two guys. Gordon hits it long. Thompson's a good putter. You add that combination, it might work. And then all the reasons why I liked Werenski and Uline as before.
Those are gone. Yes, sir. You can get Will Gordon and Thompson 90-1 on DraftKings still, though.
Yeah, so I mean, it's that
one 65-1 on FanDuel. So that's a monster difference. I'm going to go with that one. I like that DraftKings price for sure.
Yeah, that's the same value that I got it at. So that's perfect. And then the Werenski Uline one, what is that down to right now?
I just saw that one. Where'd we go? 90-1 on DraftKings, 90-1 on FanDuel. Points bet, we would assume they're close. 80-1 on points bet.
Wow, that number's, and that one might be from an offshore account. I mean, it's kind of the same general premise as the one before. I mean, I have 80-1 as proper on it. So all those numbers, I don't have a problem with it if that's the only number you have access to. As I keep saying, try to grab whatever the best number you can find on it. But it's a value for me at above 80 on that. It's a value for Teeter and Straka above 80. So always do your shopping. Try to, you know, price match and get the best number you can with it. But those are the seven plays I have. It's, I think I have 1.15 units in play, which is, you know, on the higher side of what I normally do. I'll probably punch a last ticket and follow you with the Peters and Lewis thing. Add an extra 10th, a little, probably 0.11 units there with that. I'll try to get that up to about a 7-unit win. And so, yeah, I'll have a little bit over 1.25 units this week in outrights. And all the head-to-heads are always, for the most part, going to be bet to win a unit. I will have a little bit more on the Su and Gim one, but I mean, even for me, I mean, we're talking about a win total of like 1.25 units with it. So you're always kind of in the vicinity with it. Like all my head to heads are always around to win a unit. And then the top 40 plays, they're mostly half unit plays for me. And then the Teeter Straka one, I did go a little bit more heavy on than the rest.
Well, let's get after it. I like that one too. I'm a big subtracted guy.
Yeah.
Any other closing thoughts?
No, I mean, I think it's you know, as we were saying to start this thing, it's a volatile tournament. Embrace the volatility with it. I think it's important to at least come up with some sort of a formula of what you're going to do. I mean, there's no blueprint that's 100% correct with how you want to run it, but you should try to come up with some formula of what you're trying to do and just differentiate it as much as you can from the market. And, you know, you would be surprised when you run things that are somewhat close to like what you deem to be proper. Like my numbers didn't deviate all that much from what the sports books were. So I feel like, you know, I'm happy with where the numbers were. I was able to, like, all the bets I mentioned is where I found the value. Most other bets were either, you know, overvalued plays or right where they should have been in certain outright numbers with it. So, you know, I think it, for as wonky of a week as this was something that I think you can still find value with it. I just think it's going to take a little bit more of a complicated effort to do so.
I think regardless, it'll be fun to watch. And I know a lot of content providers out there took the week off. So it's good to kind of, you know, I was even contemplating doing the same thing because I don't personally know how to handicap it. But I was like, I know if I pick your brain, we'll get some good content out there. So I appreciate your time, man. And appreciate all everybody's support. The show just keeps growing every week. So we can't thank you enough. We'll do some more giveaways here in the next couple of weeks when we get some more bigger tournaments coming up. But yeah, thanks again, Spencer. I greatly appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. This was a lot of fun.